My first thought was, have you seen Dune 2, Kirsten?
Not yet. It's on my calendar.
As soon as I saw where that charge report was moved to, my thought was, yeah!
Okay.
That's it. That's the joke.
If you know,
that's
you know. Okay.
Got if it. You know, you know.
Hello. Welcome to the Autonicast. I'm Kirsten Korosek, transportation editor at TechCrunch.
And I'm Alex Roy, the founder of the Human Driving Association and the co-founder and principal of Johnson & Roy, the finest and most insightful transportation, AI, and robotics consultancy in, well, those verticals.
I'm Ed Niedermeyer. I'm the author of Ludicrous, the Unvarnished Story of Tesla Motors. And I'm also recovering from all the excitement yesterday on the internet about, well, some Rivian news. Really, a lot of the excitement seemed to be about one particular car that Rivian showed. But as usual, Kirsten was there on the spot doing credible high gravitas reporting on this event.
Ed, you weren't invited. No one invited you, Ed?
Yeah, I must have been lost in the mail. Honestly, but Kirsten, you were there on scene. You spoke to a board member. I mean, you were doing it for TechCrunch. Tell us about this Rivian launch event.
All right. Well, first of all, I should say that Rivian was provided. So to be clear, I'm not a Rivian owner. I thought it'd be cool to drive there and test the R1S because I hadn't been in the R1S really much. I've been in the pickup truck a bunch. And also it's been a while since I had experienced some of the new software updates and stuff like that. So I had a Rivian R1S and I drove it to the event. So from Arizona to Laguna Beach. And I tested one of the Rivian Adventure Network chargers. So that was interesting. So I can say a couple things. I forgot how big it feels to drive that SUV. Way too big for me. Would never buy this vehicle because it is just massive, aside from the fact that I couldn't afford it. But just way too big. Almost all of the UI and layout I like, except for, and everyone at Rivian knows this because every time I interview someone, I always mention it, I cannot stand having to control the air vent with my finger on a digital screen. Drives me crazy. I know you can get used to it. I just think it's obnoxious. The ADAS was I have tepid feelings about it.
Suboptimal?
I wouldn't say it's suboptimal, but it has some work to do. So they do one thing that I like, and then a couple things I'm like, eh. Super easy to engage. It's the stock, you know, it's the gear shifter. You just push it down once, boom. A big chime right there on the digital instrument screen, all good. But when you do it again and it gives into lane keeping, they're a little bit of ping-ponging. Not a fan of that. Also not a fan of the fact that, you know, you have to have your hands on it, which is fine, but the torque sensor seems to be so sensitive that, like, if I just, like, not unintentionally put a little bit of weight on the steering wheel, it disengage, which is very annoying. But the one thing I liked before I get to the event was that when you put on the indicator, it doesn't do automatic change lanes yet. But if you put on the indicator and lane keeping was all, you know, on, you could steer into the correct lane without it disengaging, which I thought was nice. And then once you were settled in, it went blue again and it was back into lane keeping. And I know there's a debate about whether that's safe or not. Personally, I think the abruptness of disengaging and re-engaging is very distracting, and having it working in the background, especially if it's communicated very clearly, was nice. So that was my R1S experience. And it led up to the event at Laguna Beach. A very Rivian event. First of all, they took over the South Coast Theater. You know, all their branding all over it. I believe that they've completely renovated that. And it's, you know, hundreds of feet from the Pacific Ocean. There are Rivians all over Orange County. Like, if you were an alien and you dropped in Orange County, you'd be like, oh, it's Tesla. And, like, it looks like a lot of this Rivian must be a big company. Tons of Rivians everywhere. The event was in this theater. And there was a lot of excitement, except for when I was walking in, it kind of felt like people were sort of like, oh, we know what it's going to be. It's going to be the R2. The specs were leaked. We kind of know what it is. But you know, big surprise. For one, the R2 came in lower price than expected. And I kind of wonder if they like just changed the price and they're like, we'll figure out how to scrape that $2,000. So it starts at 45. But I think the big thing where a lot of people got really excited was the next vehicles, which were kind of RJ Scringe's, the CEO and founder's, you know, one more thing, which was the R3, a really sporty looking, fun, very Honda-y vibes, hatchback, and then the R3X, which is like the performance version. So those were the big reveals, plus a bunch of accessories, plus a bunch of, you know, design changes. And that was all the product. To me, one of the most important announcements, though, which was kind of offhandishly said, but was revealed in the regulatory filing that dropped, is that it looks like the Georgia plant, it's paused, and they're bringing that R2 into Normal, Illinois. It's saving them $2.25 billion, and they're able to move up production to the first half of 2026, which answered a really big question for me, which is, man, 2 years is a really long time. And a lot of vehicles are going to come out in the next 2 years. Can Rivian hold on in the meantime? So that kind of answered that question a little bit for me. I mean, it's still 2 years, but if they had been the Georgia plant, it would have been like 2.5, 3. So that's the end of my rant or slash what happened. What were you guys thinking as you watched it on the interwebs and saw commentary?
Ed, you want to go first?
Well, I'll just say, I mean, you know, on social media, certainly on Blue Sky, where I'm sort of most active right now, the R3 and R3X like really kind of stole the show. I seen it on Threads as well. I actually heard a rumor, the sourcing is not, you know, locked down or whatever, but that kind of Rivian did not expect. The Rivian execs did not expect the R3 to steal the show as much as it did. It's certainly on a personal level. I really like the R3. I think it's really cool and really stands out in the EV space. And I think it really seemed to resonate with at least the kinds of people who follow the space closely, which may not be the same as, you know, the overall market.
Yeah, I would say that a lot of journalists loved it. But that doesn't always translate into sales. But there isn't that car right now that exists as an EV that doesn't feel like a novelty, that looks actually kind of cool and is small.
Alex, you're a resident cool hunter. I mean, you love this thing, right?
I do love it. And honestly, like, it's a smack in the face to VW. This should have been this was theirs to release. It should have been years ago. Like, what a colossal failure of imagination and product planning. And I suppose, I mean, what's coming down the pike that would compete with it? I haven't seen anything like that cool.
The R3
is more expensive and bigger.
Yeah. Yep. And I would say,
what else is there?
Well, on the R2, I think it will face more competition. You know, this is the midsize SUV. It's going to be coming out, if things go as planned, the first half of 2026. That's the same time Scout Motors, by the way, is also going to put out its vehicles, both boxy shapes, both leaning into the adventure. The interesting thing will be, we haven't seen the final design of the Scout, but as we had Scott on our episode last week, he said there's going to be a lot of analog features, mechanical features, knobs, buttons. That's not the experience of the Rivian. They redid the steering wheel, and there are these cool knurled sort of dials, but again, very screen-centric as opposed to bunch of knobs and buttons. But both are very adventure-y, lifestyle-y type stuff. I think Scout, if they're smart, will really heavily lean into rugged, like off-roading. And that could be a differentiator. But I think they'll go head-to-head because they'll be both coming out the same time if the schedules. But the R3, you know, I can't really think of anything on the market today in the United States that would compete with it.
So, yeah, totally agree with you. And I hate, like, the easy narratives of, like, EVs are, and, like, new, you know, companies are going to destroy like old car companies. Like, where are the old car companies leading here? Like the EV, the Chevy Blazer, which is just, you know, junk, is back in the market as of a couple of days ago. And would you rather have that or any of these? Like, it's just so obvious. I'm going to go the other way and be a little bit of a cranky ninny. Consumer Reports just released its annual car issue. Is it annual or twice a year? And they were ranking companies. And the shocker to me was that BMW came in first for like customer satisfaction, brand loyalty, and a bunch of other things. And reliability was like, okay. Toyota is obviously always leading the reliability. But man, on the wrong half of that chart, whereas Mercedes-Benz, we'll put that aside, and Rivian. I think Tesla was above Rivian, which is a shock and a disappointment to see, because I'm really rooting for Rivian to win. I love these guys. And I'm rooting for a Scout to win. I love these guys. Let's hope that they bake their, is it software they're having issues with?
Well, I think that there's been a few issues. And to me, this is where the two roads diverge, right? Like, on the one hand, their young experimental culture, which we saw the same thing with Tesla, allow them to be free to create something different than what the boring legacy companies are doing. But their inexperience on manufacturing is 100% showing. And I know that they have been pushing to make improvements. I talked to, and I'll have a story out soon, interviewed RJ Scringe, the CEO and founder, after the event. And we covered a lot of ground, including, you know, the future improvements. They have a new, it's been kind of out there in the world, called Peregrine. It's basically big, big step improvements on the R1S, the flagship. And that's imminent. We'll see if it solves a lot of those problems. I think one of the big issues that hopefully Rivian figures out is that the vehicles are just really expensive to fix. And so, you know, I know people who absolutely love their pickup truck, but it will kill me in like expenses to fix. So especially like if you get a fender bender, there was a viral story that went around that. It's like they need to figure out how to fix and service these cars and get through some of these reliability issues. To me, it feels like growing pains, but like time's running out for them to solve that, right? Like, people won't be patient forever.
You know for whom time has really run out? Did you see Marques Brownlee's video about the Fisker Ocean?
Yes.
That company is not going to make it. I think he just murdered them. I'm sorry to say that, because Fisker's designed some cool cars, but man, that was
a really interesting video. I don't know, Ed, did you see it?
I didn't know. I've heard a bit about it though. Yeah.
So about a week before that, Sean O'Kane, one of our reporters at TechCrunch, released an investigative report that he had been working on for many weeks, really detailing internal documents that sources shared with us of all the many, many, many problems, plus lawsuits, plus NHTSA investigations around Fisker, rollaway, sudden loss of power, hoods flying off. And then a week later, Mark Liebbaum's video comes out. And then hilariously on TikTok or Twitter, there was a video of, and I forget the guy, but he's like a popular YouTuber. He records the conversation with the Fisker comms person trying to track down where that vehicle, who owned that vehicle that was reviewed. And it's just comedy ensues. And it's too bad because the look of it is kind of nice, but it just goes back to show. And like, Rivian doesn't have anywhere near these types of problems, but it just goes to show you can have something that looks nice, but if it's not functioning, people will leave you very quickly and it's unsustainable. And even Ford has talked about how it needs to get its warranty costs down, right? Like, quality is even a problem for a 100-year-old company. because it's with new car launches. So, you know, it'll be a big test. And my one concern for Rivian is how many flagship vehicles can they sell between now and the R2? And this was a question, if you remember, around the Model S, but they had the X too. And like, until people could, how long would people wait for the Model 3? And there was that like big gap in time. So it sort of feels familiar, I guess.
Well, and so you mentioned this update to the R1 TR1S platform. When is that supposed to happen?
I think later this year, like imminently.
Later this year.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. And it's been, there's been some blogs about it and stuff. Yeah. And there's been some talk about these improvements coming, and I'm not sure exactly what is involved, but I think it's meant to be pretty comprehensive.
Yeah.
Kirsten, did you ask RJ about why they moved the charger door to the rear right?
That is one question I did not ask him. I know it was asked, but that seems to be quite the fluttering activity going on right now in social media. So the charge port is at the rear passenger, and that will create issues for those at superchargers. Alex, you have a Tesla, so why don't you explain why?
Well, supercharger cables aren't that long. So even if you have a Tesla with it's the rear left is where your connector is, you need to park just right. And so if the rear right means you need, well, some say Tesla superchargers are going to have longer cables in the future, and destination chargers have long cables because I guess they've foreseen this. But that's for the legacy superchargers, which are most of them, it's really inconvenient. I don't know how that works.
Customers are saying basically what Tesla customers and people who follow Rivian are saying, that this is going to mean that two spots will be taken up in order to like fit that.
Bring extra keys to write your name in the other guy's paint, because that is not going to fly for very long with the Tesla guys. As soon as I saw the charger port of the rear right, my first thought was, have you seen Dune 2, Kirsten?
Not yet. It's on my calendar.
As soon as I saw where that charger port was moved to, my thought was, yeah!
Okay.
That's it. That's the joke.
If you know,
that's
you know. Okay. Got
if
it.
You know, you know.
So, yeah, Kirsten, you raise a really good question about, right, like, can Rivian keep selling enough R1T, R1S? And honestly, this, from what I've heard a little bit about this update from friends in the supply chain, and it's a very comprehensive reengineering of basically the entire platform, mostly oriented around driving down cost, right? And right now, like, you know, on this first generation vehicles, you know, Rivian's losing almost
44,000.
It's almost the base MSRP of this new generation of vehicles. So what they're talking about doing, if they're talking about doing it profitably, is like a really significant leap. And I think that's
right.
And one of the weird pieces of this as well to me is, like, you know, he's talking about the R2, RJ talked about how the R2 is going to, it sounded like from the description that I heard, going to have sort of like a level 3 capability, sort of hands-off.
And I talked to
off.
Him a little bit about this.
Okay.
And you will be proud, because, you know, I said, you know, this is why we shouldn't use terms like self-driving, you know, so I lectured him while I was interviewing him, of course. You're going to have to wait a little bit for my story, but basically we talked at length about when this happens and how, because I said, you said hands off and eyes off. And his pushback was, I think that today's DMS systems aren't sufficient. They're incapable. They're easily cheatable. Mm. And so is this a hedge? We won't do anything until we have the right system. And so this could happen later on. Or was this addressing like what he truly believes is a problem in the industry? I think it's a little bit of both, right? It gives them an out if they can't find something he also hinted at like more of a vertical integration and not using the supplier network in-house, which could also lengthen timelines. So We'll see.
That's what everyone right now is.
I got it. Everyone thinks they're going to verticalize in-house. Good luck with that.
And replace Mobileye. Yeah, that's what that's.
Good luck with that.
Yep. Yep.
By the way, I have, was curious about Tesla DMS software upgrades. So I'm like, I wonder, let's find out, because my father's, 1971 Review Italian fashion, deep tinted glasses easily defeat the DMS in a Tesla. I'm like, well, let's just put some black tape over my Tesla DMS cam. And guess what? Autopilot continues to function. No problem.
if you're listening FSD to this from NHTSA, take a note. The recalls are doing nothing.
Yeah. FSD will not activate with a tape covered DMS cam, but here is the cheat. Okay.
Oh, and it won't. Cause I've seen people that it will. No. Oh, okay.
FSD will not. However, autopilot will.
Autopilot will. Oh, interesting.
Autopilot will. FSD will not. However, if you remove
the recall is for autopilot, not FSD. Ugh, anyway.
With the tape on and autopilot, the torque sensors hand on wheel interval drops dramatically if tape is on the camera. But here's the kicker. If you just are annoyed with that, just remove the tape and go on eBay and find a pair of 1970 to 72 Italian Review brand aluminum frame sunglasses with a deep, deep tint. Because you could activate FSD, close your eyes, or look at your phone nonstop for hours. No problem.
So we have a lot to cover. I just wanted to touch on, because I've always felt like automated driving is a weird fit for Rivian as a brand. It always kind of feels like they're doing it because that's what you do if you're a sexy electric vehicle. Certainly when you look at the $45,000 price point and you're talking about a sensor suite, whatever the capability ultimately is of 11 cameras and 5 radar, that is a significant chunk of cost in that vehicle for something that I'm not sure that a Rivian really needs much more than a basic L2 system.
ADAS.
And this is this and also like it kind of the echo of this is also just the fact that they committed to this second factory, which now there is just sort of in limbo and like who knows what's going to happen. So like Rivian, it's cool to see them come out, show cool vehicles. Like they clearly have the juice in terms of like appealing to people. And I think people are desperate for something to get excited about in a way that it's harder to about Tesla these days due to some
of
the baggage.
What are you talking about? My Tesla's great. I have an order on a Cybertruck. What are you talking about?
What new products have they – I mean, besides the Cybertruck, which I would not characterize – there's a lot of attention. I don't know if it's
– All right, let's not get distracted.
Everything you said about sensors, hardware, investment in factories, and take it to the company that had it all in its hand and walked away. Kirsten?
Okay. Are you talking about Apple?
Please.
Well, I feel like both of you should give more of it. This was not my story to break because Bloomberg did, as they often do around Apple. But shocker, Apple Car is dead. Who could have possibly guessed it? But what was more interesting, because, for people who have followed this, it's been a decade of it's on, it's off, it's on, it's off. It was like the worst kept secret in Silicon Valley. But at the same time, there's very little details. Interesting.
I have some details.
I'm sure you do. And you can share here. I think that the larger magazine styled piece that came out after the initial news story, also by Bloomberg, was had some really interesting details in there about all the different companies that Apple worked with. And I just came away from that and just my experience of talking to people about this over the years is they completely didn't know what they were doing when it came to vehicles. It turns out, guess what, you guys? Building cars is hard.
What?
No way.
If only someone had been able to say that and to make that argument in a way that Apple could have heard.
Look, I found – I had all kinds of interesting – little leaks, rumors over the years. But the funniest one was that I can say this. Apparently, leadership at Apple at the very top, above Titan, would come visit from time to time. And they would ask questions so stupid. I'll share one of them with you now. Why can't this car be completely transparent? I mean, you have a skateboard, the battery's a skateboard. It needs to be completely transparent. It'll be better for visibility and also look really cool. Why not?
So a see-through car?
A see-through car. That was a serious request made at one time.
I feel like the why and the how are both such huge questions.
It gives me immediately, like, for all the Gen Xers out there, Super Friends and Wonder Woman flying around in her invisible jet.
And, you know, if you think about how many smart people were leading Titan at one point and left, Doug Field, Alex Hitzinger, these are zero BS individuals with strong opinions. And every time they left, how much knowledge they took with them and how glad they were probably to leave. Because here's another question that was asked. I don't know who asked this of whom, but this is corroborated. Someone came in from Apple at the top and said, I don't understand. Why can't you just design a car that just won't hit anything ever? Because that's table stakes, guys.
So I actually wrote a piece for Bloomberg. It was Bloomberg View at the time, and now Bloomberg Opinion, in 2014, when the first sort of stories about Apple Car Project Titan started coming out. And I argued that it wasn't going to be a car, that they weren't. I was like, there's no way they're going to make and sell a car. It just doesn't make sense for them to be in that business. I think Uber was you know, real hot at the time, and I was like, if they do make a vehicle, like a bespoke Apple vehicle, it will not be one that you own. It'll be part of a service. It'll be like either they'll have their own, you know, you get it through Apple Maps, or maybe it's a tier of Uber or something like that. But like, that's what it's going to be, because, you know, Apple doesn't have brand values that translate into a traditional human-driven car. And what's really interesting, I'm just bragging about how validated I'm feeling about how right I was. But partially what was really interesting was that, like, you know, the Project Titan from this reporting that we're getting now, it appears to have been very much a, like, this is going to be a fully autonomous car that you're going to own. And it wasn't until quite recently that they basically started saying, yeah, so like, technologically, that may just not happen, right? That like a level 5 privately owned autonomous vehicle is just not in the realm of possibilities. What if we then look at, you know, an EV, and apparently they developed a whole concept that was just a more traditional EV that had a level 2, you know, ADAS. And essentially they're like, this just seems like it could be something from any car company. And I think that whole journey is like so instructive. And there've been some interesting pieces written recently about this, and you know, it's about like the death of the self-driving car. And that's that, you know, as usual, I think there's a lot of people who sort of like, you know, run to these wild conclusions about what that means. But like, really, you know, if Apple could not make a privately owned level 5 car, you know, burning $1 billion a year for however many, you know, basically a decade now, you know, no one else is going to do it. And I think it's just cool that we are finally reaching the point, with the exception of Tesla full self-driving.
I disagree too.
Okay. I disagree.
Where a car, though, like, we're just done with the idea that you're going to buy and own a car that's going to just like drive itself everywhere.
No, Kirsten, I just think that, just really quickly, and then you can take it away. I just think that the argument that like, if Apple couldn't do it, then therefore no one can do it is a weak argument, because Apple's very good at many things, but just because someone is excellent at building phones doesn't mean that they will be excellent at building a car or anything else. Do I think they're amazing at design and branding? Yes, of course. And, you know, creating an entire ecosystem with apps and stuff like that. But I don't think it's a one-to-one translation. And it sounds like, based on like, many anecdotes I've heard, including the two that Alex shared here, is that there was a huge disconnect about what from the upper management about what was even technologically possible and the people who were working on it. So let's say you had stripped out all that silly bureaucracy and not like disconnect between upper management and the project and let them do things, where would they have been more successful? Possibly. I mean, I think that they smartly looked at it and said, we can't do anything that is like everything else out in the market. And so why waste even more money, and then just killed it? But I don't think that just because they couldn't do it doesn't mean that some other company can't do it. I think it's very hard and very expensive, but like Waymo, it does have an operating robotaxi service right now, you know?
We're agreeing because what this is validating, right? See, and like, I think like, if you look at what the automakers did, like the companies that know cars and car ownership and that business, they didn't get seduced into the idea that, well, I guess maybe Mary Barra at GM is maybe sort of an exception to this a little bit. But all she ever did was really talk. It's not evidence that they wasted a lot of money developing a privately owned level five. You know, like Apple was the intersection of the naivete to try with the resources and like brand and like recruiting pull and all these other things to give it the best possible chance. I'm just saying, within the Silicon Valley group of companies and people who think it's a goal that's even worth pursuing, the view will be that Apple, right?
If Got Apple it. Can't okay. do it, then I misunderstood then, what you're saying. Yeah, then we no, can't. That makes sense. And I, by the way, I should be clear. I don't think that like some self-driving car is around the corner for like people to buy, just FYI. I just, you know, like in case there was any misunderstanding on that end.
I would argue that if you were a Chinese company or Tesla and you just decided that safety really doesn't matter, or you would stop paying lip service to it, you could deploy a level five self-driving car a lot sooner. And I have
lawyers could feast on your corpse. Yeah.
I have a hunch that we might see in China products that you'll never see in a Europe, United States, marketed as such. I would also say that Apple, the big missed opportunity, you did touch on this. I agree with you here, Ed. The big missed opportunity was to build a holistic service around mobility that was not 100% rooted in cars, because Apple could have bought any number of companies, potentially a car company or a car and a bike company and a ride hail platform, and united them holistically under like the Apple, you know, Apple mobility banner, in the way that Amazon, in theory, with Zooks, if they bought a bike company, could unite it all under Amazon Prime Mobility. And there are very few brands that could even have the ambition or even the ability to even try. And Apple is one of them, and yet there was a complete failure of imagination there. Well, let's just say their imagination was exactly half as far as it needed to go to get anywhere. Because recently I thought about what I'm going to do at the end of my Tesla lease. I'm like, what? I live in Phoenix. I use Waymos all the time. I love it. What is the missing component of my mobility lifestyle? So I marched down to the electric bike store. I bought myself electric X-Peak off-road mountain bike. And now I have achieved, without paying Apple or Amazon, I've achieved full spectrum mobility. So, and I love it. I absolutely love it. So I just, it sucks to see the money have gotten wasted that way, but it is what it is.
Is it weird that I have a hard time picturing you on a bike?
The thing too is, right, so like, everyone's calling this a failure, and it is, right? There's no ambiguity about that. They tried to do something. They set themselves a goal, which, by the way, fascinating that they didn't set themselves the goal of making a robotaxi. The goal that they thought was worth pursuing was the privately owned car, which is interesting. But, you know, failure that it was, right? Like, at least this is a company that has tons of cash. And prestige, and like they were able to just burn $1 billion on something that didn't go anywhere. And you know, there's only one other company that you can compare Project Titan to directly in terms of a development program whose goal is a privately owned level five self-driving vehicle, and that is Tesla and full self-driving. And to Apple's enormous credit, right? One way of resolving this development help thing going nowhere, obviously, like, was they could have released it to the public, called it beta, promised that they would continue to push up to seriously. They could have done what Tesla did.
But they would never do that.
And they didn't. Right. Well, so they're both constrained by, you know, their brand prestige, but part of that is the fact that they make a lot of money and they can afford to waste it, whereas Tesla, didn't have that situation when they started full self-driving. It was a way to actually improve their profitability. So, you know, failure that it is, I think it's really important to keep perspective on the fact that there is still a company out there ostensibly pursuing the same goal that now Apple has failed at, and doing it in a much less safe and ethical and I don't know.
I got bad news for you, Ed. I get bad news for you. It's going to take a long time. A long time. But eventually Tesla will release something. You may not like it, and you may not want to wait that long for it if you paid for it. But something will come out of them. It's just not on a timeline or in the paradigm of safety that you would tolerate. And I'm not sure I would tolerate either.
Alex, your Tesla will not drive itself. I don't know how many times you're going to make me say this.
But several generations from now, I might be dead. Tesla will have.
Oh, geez. I might be dead, but that's like, you know, saying, I don't know.
If that were true, it would not make what they've done not a fraud.
I'm not disagreeing with that. Now, can we just move on for a second to our friends at Waymo? Because I have written a column, which should have come out by now, about this last thing, which is not their expansion, which is the big news, but about the insane the critics of self-driving and supporters are now guilty of doing to self-driving and autonomous vehicles what has happened in other areas of discourse in our society, which is the critics believe the failure of one company is a failure of all. And the supporters believe that the success of one company is the inevitable success of all. And the distinction between what's happened to Cruise, because they brought it on themselves, and what Waymo has accomplished in the same like 6-8 week span could not be more obvious, that the technology has a future.
Yeah.
But no, it's not a future everyone will profit from.
Yeah. Well, and again, like I think people have been really confused by the car part of this, right? When you say self-driving car, they think a car, you know, a car is something that you own and goes anywhere you want. It's a privately owned level 5 vehicle. And so I don't think people think of robo-taxis as cars. And they aren't, right? Like a taxi is a car, but it's also a taxi. It's also something distinct from a car. I think we have this fascinating best of times, worst of times thing going on, where on the one hand, it's like, okay, finally the self-driving car is dead. But at the same time, Waymo is, continuing to show that the level 4 approach is not something where, you know, you get completely stuck in one place and can't move to a different domain and sort of validate safety there at a brisk pace. Their pace at, you know, opening up new markets is, I think, surprising everybody. It's sort of a Charles Dickens, you know, it was the best of times, it was the worst of times kind of a situation.
Nice. I like the literary reference. The Waymo thing is interesting because, you know, I've been in contact with folks who are definitely, apprehensive, to say the least, about the expansion, you know, city officials and things like that in the San Francisco area. And there is a lot of pushback there. The same week, actually, the day before Waymo received approval from the California Public Utilities Commission for its application, basically an altered application that expands its area where it can charge for rides. Now it can all throughout Los Angeles, the San Francisco Peninsula, and San Francisco highways. Those last two are very important because it unlocks the San Francisco airport and goes into San Mateo County. So that's very important expansion. But just the day before, I was interviewing Takedra Mawakano, who's the co-CEO of Waymo. And, you know, I asked her, and she's very well media trained, but I did ask her about the differences in the population and how some seem to accept sort of robo-taxis. And particularly in San Francisco, there's this extreme tension happening there. And whether there are just, you know, I kind of asked the question, like, are there markets like San Francisco where it just isn't worth operating because of constant vandalism and also regulatory pressure? And of course, she said, well, no, we're going to stay in San Francisco. And if we leave because of lawlessness, that would be sad. But I do think it's a fair question that companies need to be asking themselves, because there are markets in which it's just, to me, not worth it, even though it'd be a nice little, you know, accomplishment. It's like, what's the cost of that?
Let me say, I watched all the videos of the San Francisco torching of the Waymo, mm-hmm. and I watched and read a little everything. I absolutely do not buy that there is any kind of mass on the ground, like civilian opposition to Waymos or it's just, you know, autonomous vehicles, robotaxis. Because if you look at the videos in San Francisco, you have, I think less than five people actually performing the violence on the car, at least from the videos that I saw. You do have whipping or fanning the flames around it, some, you know, far left anarchist organizations trying to pretend there's like a groundswell movement against this. And then that put all those folks in a silo. Then there are actual legitimate organizations and some labor groups that are concerned about the effect of autonomous trucking on, you know, trucking jobs. And beyond that, if you go to other states, you know, Arizona, Texas, Florida, there is literally zero opposition. Waymo went through like the early phase of a few people, you know, messing with the cars years ago. And since then, it hasn't grown. It's evaporated. I am not at all buying the mass, like, you know, anarchic opposition. And I'm afraid one of our former guests, Paris Marx, he tweeted that it was a beautiful scene, the torture of the robotaxi.
So that's
not
the-
that is not a constructive way of criticizing the vehicles. And when I say that autonomous vehicles need better critics, I'm talking about this.
Yeah.
There is a legitimate debate to be had, but it is not the destruction of the vehicles or of all of them or even one brand that solves anything.
But the fact, right, so for me, yes, like clearly this was an isolated incident. It was very few people. It was in the midst of other sort of drunken rowdiness and you know, things kind of take on a life of their own. I don't, you know, I definitely don't think it was like a, yeah, like a targeted thing. But once it happened, there was definitely a reaction among sort of more left-wing folks of like, good, right? Like, and like, you know, Paris maybe had one sort of extreme of that or whatever, but there were, you know, and so I think for me, you know, I don't think there's a lot of people that hate AV so much that they want to go out and torch one and do that. But like, if it's happened and it's just a you know, a spectacle that sort of floats past you on the feed, that like your hot take is like, cool, like great, someone's pushing back. Like there, that is a decent amount of people. And now, and I will say, you know, it's not that view is like the dominant or the only one in the Bay Area. The Bay Area is a very divided place between tech people and not tech people. And the tensions between those two groups are high. And that's what this is reflecting more than, and we've talked about this, right? More than any AV thing.
Really,
in LA, that won't be quite the same. Apparently what I'm hearing though is that the unions are kind of stepping up and want LA to be sort of the battlefield for them. So I think LA, there will be some version of this, but it's going to look different because my understanding is the Teamsters in particular are putting a lot of eggs in sort of the, if we stop AVs, we can, you know, get political points out of that or something.
Right. You know, something, well, this thing about what people object to, these polls, like, oh, how do you feel about a self-driving autonomous vehicles? I'm convinced that the people's negative reaction is because there's been countless stories of crashes involving Teslas, and they're conflating Tesla, autopilot, and FSD with actual autonomous vehicles. And now I'm done ranting, my friends, because Kirsten is going to wrap this up with her wisdom.
Oh, gosh. You got to stop doing that, Alex. So basically what we were just talking about kind of goes back to the point and the original question. And so I think that San Francisco is going to continue to be a problem. What I'm very curious is to see is if pockets of Los Angeles also prove to have that same problem or if it's more readily embraced. I know there are certain areas like Santa Monica where there's been some good feedback and maybe some others where it's not. So to me, that's a whole other discussion about embracing and acceptance of robotaxis as they continue to expand and what that means for certain people's access to mobility. But that is a conversation for another day. And so unless Ed has any parting words, I would just say, thank you for listening to another episode of the Autonicast.